This is the Church Planting Podcast, brought to you by the Broadcast Network. Broadcast exists to support, train and encourage church planters. For more information about who we are or about the training that we offer, please visit our website at www.thebroadcastnetwork.org.
Hello everybody, welcome back to the Broadcast Podcast. This is myself, Tom O'Toole, and I'm here with Tim Simmons. We're both part of the team on Broadcast and both based at Christchurch Manchester. And today we're resuming our series that we started before Christmas, taking a little break from it. But we're back with our series on cultures, thinking about the kind of cultures in a church that enable you to be pioneering, to be planting. We use the language multi-planting for our multi-site model of starting lots of new sites. And we talk about these as the cultures of our church, but also we'd see them as the ingredients really from most churches that have success in planting and pioneering. And there are a few different points, but today we're going to get into one that we call the have a go culture. So Tim, why don't you kick us off and talk about what do we mean when we say a have a go culture?
I think really for us it's an attitude of wanting to be able to try things and not worry too much about the success or failure, which is easy to say and harder to do. But I think for us often it works out in planting new sites or bringing through new leaders or giving opportunity to people. So I guess it's probably a bit of a discipleship attitude. I think we're always fighting within the church to have an attitude where we say yes to people and not say no on people's behalves. So sometimes you can think, oh, perhaps this person could do that, and there'll be a list of reasons why they can't, many of them valid, but actually it's the person's responsibility to say no. But I think it is a kind of a discipling, pushing forwards. Let's have a go at this and see what God is up to. So I think, yeah, that'd be a fair summary.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think you've picked up on both aspects of it there, in terms of there's a way that have a go works out with an individual. So they've got an idea, or maybe they don't even have an idea. Maybe there's something that we identify or somebody else identifies in them. And there's an encouragement to step out, there's space and opportunity given. But then it transcends individuals as well. It's about the kind of things that we do as a church. And I think one of the stories that embodies it really well, actually, is when you first came up here and planted the Fallowfield site. Do you want to tell that story? Because it really does encapsulate what we mean by have a go.
Yeah, I mean, that was our kind of leap into a have a go culture. So we moved to Manchester summer 2009, with the hope that we would plant a church. So we joined Christchurch Manchester, which at the time was just one Sunday morning meeting in Hyde, out in the east of Manchester at the time. And we joined because the church invited us to plant into the kind of south central Manchester, where the students' 20s, that kind of more of that, the urban centre. And so when we moved up, I genuinely thought, because I'd read the church planting books, so we'll move into the city, we'll learn what the city's like, we'll just kind of take our time to get to know the church. And Colin Barron, who led the church at the time, said, that's fine, but let's just get started. Just find a venue, Tim, and let's get started. And so I think for me, it was a big, that you learn when you do. So, and you grow in confidence as you succeed, and you learn your lessons as you fail. And I think for us, this is how we grow. And for me, I wouldn't have matured or grown if I'd have just sat and learned the city. I wouldn't have developed as a leader. I would have just got frustrated. So I think having a go was, let's just get in and see what happens.
Yes. Yeah, and thinking about like yourself at that time, I didn't know you at that moment, but first met you a year or two after, so pretty close to that time. And you were someone given that opportunity to have a go who didn't have a track record of having planted a whole bunch of churches. This was your first time doing it. You didn't have a massive budget to start with. You didn't have a huge launch team. You were bootstrapping it, weren't you?
Yeah, so in many ways, it was low risk. I mean, I would say I was slightly high risk in that I had desire but no experience. Yeah. But that's probably, you know, even that is not, it's not a super high risk. Mm-hmm. Because the church already existed, and because I wasn't the leader of the church, I was just someone who'd been brought in to do this. My level of authority and influence within the church was pretty low. And they weren't, you know, there were plenty of other things I could have done in the church with my time, and I did do. So I covered lots of other bases. Even in that, when we started, it was an evening meeting. And so I ran the PA, our morning meetings, for years. Vic, my wife, she did help run the kids club. So we actually relieved a bunch of pressure in the church by being involved. And then because we were enthusiastic, we planted as an evening meeting and stayed. So the church itself didn't experience much loss in those early years. So it was quite low risk. And yeah, the venue we found was a bar that charged us like 20 quid. And I stole someone else's worship leader. And so it wasn't a hard and a super high risky thing. Yes. Definitely.
Yeah. And that, I think, is the key to it, isn't it? Like, it worked out, and that that site got planted, well established. It's still there today, and two meetings now in that place, and has planted a whole bunch of other sites. So a lot has come of it. But had that not been the case, like if you'd have run the scenario where you'd have had a crack at it, you'd have met for a year, you'd have not gathered any people in, and then a decision has been made. Okay, well, that didn't quite work out. Yeah. We'll pull back to the morning meeting, maybe look at planning somewhere else in future. I don't think a lot of harm would have been done, other than maybe to your ego.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's interesting. I mean, if I will look at other churches that plant, and they tend to plant not very often, so it can be, you know, you could do one or two a decade, and then there'll be quite a big team, so the biggest team we've ever sent has been 20 people, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, but you'll often see them sending 30 or 40 and lots of families, and there is budget behind it. So the stakes are really quite high, and there's often a sense of this has to work. And often it comes from relatively bigger than we were as well. So the kind of context you're leaving is, you know, you're trading off into something that has to work but isn't as good. So the losses are very keenly felt very quickly. Well, I remember talking to Colin, I was saying, look, what if this doesn't work? And genuinely, because of my ego and because I was heavily invested, which I should have, it was the right thing. And he just said, oh, we'll just work out another way of doing it.
Yeah.
So everything was an opportunity to learn a lesson. And he wouldn't have had to go back to the trustees and gone, yeah, we've blown 70 grand on this plant and it's gone, it's not worked. It was, you know, much to tiny amounts of money. And the people that would have been hurt would have been, yeah, me and Vic would have been very sad. But even by Colin saying, we're just going to work out another way of doing it, there was no sense of like, success or die.
Yes.
Which is, yeah, that's just a hard place to live as a pastor and a planter.
It is. And like having been involved in ones that aren't still there now. I know the have a go side of the journey, and it is difficult. Like there's bruising in trying something, but it doesn't tank ministry. Like there's still plenty of space to go again, to do different things, and it's safe. It means that you can step out, and it's not that everything's on the line and you're paralysed by this has to work or I'm a goner.
Yes, no, that's right. I mean, for us, I think adventure wins over safety, but we try and make the adventure, like we try and mitigate as many of the losses we can. Yes. And I think because we're now multi-site, there is a sense of if you're a planter, but you decide relationally to buy into us, to work with us, to be teachable, then actually everybody will be as gutted as you will be, and everybody will work harder to make sure it works. So there's the, so the have a go works because of that context as well, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And it also puts a bit of flexibility into how we do things. Like we've had different kinds of people who have wanted to plant sites with us. So there are people who came into CCM as students, came through a SAI, grew up in the faith a bit, and have really stepped out having never done anything like it before. We've had seasoned leaders who have wanted to come to the area and get involved and do stuff. And there's a whole variety of different experience people are bringing, time capacity people are bringing, different gift mix that people are bringing. And have a go. It's like, well, let's see what a shape of a site would look like planted by someone like you in an area like this.
Yes.
And so it means it doesn't have to be operationally exactly the same as every other site.
Yeah. Yeah. No, very good.
Yeah. I think another piece of the have a go culture, obviously that's totally the bigger planting of sites, but it's been interesting seeing it catch on with people who've got other ideas and other visions of what they want to do. And I mean, one of the classic stories we tell, like you'd know this better than me, but the chap who was a student who told you he wanted to plant into his halls.
Yeah, I mean, I think the exciting thing for me of the have a go stuff is that you want it to not just be church initiative, as in the organised church initiative, but that people in their own lives would want to do that. So, yeah, I mean, what is he, first year student? Just, yeah, he just totally got caught up in that we can do anything as a young person sometimes does. And I remember bouncing up to me on a Sunday, like, can we plant in my halls? And I'm in my head, I'm thinking, you're halfway through your year. You're not going to be there in 4 months. But we started an Alpha course, and him and his community group leader, they got loads of people there, and people became Christians. And really, it came from just his desire and me not kind of pour caution into it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think even Vic in her job now will talk about the cultures that she wants to bring to her team. And I think that's that slight no fear, have a go. Mm. We can all learn from our mistakes. Mm. I think is a really important one that actually you can see filter out into people's lives. I think that's a very kind of Christ-like discipleship kind of attitude to have. So yeah, I think it's when people come at you with stuff, that is always fascinating, and actually probably teaches you something about where your own heart is. So if somebody comes at you, goes, oh, I think we could do this, and your internal heart is the reason why it won't work, and perhaps that's impossible to turn off, but just saying, yeah, let's do it anyway.
Yeah,
it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I think about not too long ago, we had a lady at one of our sites who had this idea of setting up a job club.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the first I heard about it was in one of our team meetings when one of our colleagues just it's like, yeah, we've got this person starting a job club. There's a couple of things she needed, but like nothing major, just a message out to the whole church and a little bit of funding maybe. But there wasn't a lot really that was needed. She'd had the idea. No. She knew how to do it, had some people who were going to help with it, and just wanted to crack on with it. That's have a go culture, isn't it? Because initiatives are not all from the top, but they're bubbling up all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Think about the people as well. Like, I'm always struck when I read through the Gospels of the incredibly short period of time between Jesus calling his disciples to follow him and then saying, right, two by two, off you go, crack on, do the same stuff that I've been doing. It's weeks or months, probably. It's not a, you've got to be discipled for 5 years before you get to lead and try stuff. And that filters through quite a lot in the way we think about bringing people through in the opportunities that we give as well. Like for you, what are some of the kind of wins and what are some of the costs that we bear in being so quick to encourage people into preaching, worship leading, community group leading, whatever you think of really?
You really have to be able to not even rationalise failure, but help people understand that it's all right. Mm. And it often isn't necessarily the person doing the thing. So preaching is a classic example. We train hard, so I think that's an important part of it. I think we train hard. And actually that book, the Turn the Ship Around, David Marquette, was that?
Oh, it's a brilliant book.
And when he talks about how the nuclear submarine he took over as captain of it, and the fact that this submarine was almost in chaos as a kind of the team ran it, which, you know, nuclear submarine, you don't want to be in chaos. And he turned it around. And one of the things he would say is the super high levels of training, like constant training to help people. And then how he would, when he would kind of be sat in the, it's not a cockpit of a submarine.
The bridge?
The bridge, yeah, there you go, that'll do. In the bit where the in charge people are. And he would, he realised that people would defer to him all the time. And so he would really try to stop, kind of just let them play it out in front of him. But also realise that for himself, his own kind of sense of self and sense of kind of fear in it, that he needed to be hearing what they were saying. It couldn't be, you just go off and do it and I trust you and it's not in front of me at all. But actually he could observe and be part of. And I think for us that's been a big kind of, actually we want people to have a go, but actually we do need to be linked and in each other's lives and be able to hear about stuff and not even to offer opinion, but just to like feel safe. So have a go seems to work very well as a relational thing. Like we are in this a bit together. So I think if someone, like getting someone to preach, we'll train them hard and then they're not going to be brilliant for a while. They'll be fine because we've trained them hard, but it takes, you know, a number of times of preaching and for most people to actually get to a level of it being like good, you know, however you quantify that. And so for us, I think we helping everybody to realise it's all right. And actually you can hear from God and learn about the Bible from someone who's much younger than you. It's their first time preaching and you're probably better than they are, but we're humble. So we learn. So, but it works kind of relationally because of that. And so I think it's helping people to kind of realise they're all part of the discipleship process. So, I mean, most of our site teams have been led by people who are either the same age as the rest of their team or maybe even a bit younger. So there is a kind of constant battle for humility on the part of the team and the planter, isn't there? So it, for me, have a go always feels like it's, if it's just as a kind of a flow chart, it's slightly disembodied and impersonal, then it can be quite harsh. But if it is, if it is as a kind of an emotional network of a church, then it, and we allow for all of those kind of things to happen, then it feels like it's more healthy to me. Yeah, does that make sense? That was a bit of a stream.
It does make total sense. I think it ties in a lot to the model that we have of church. So we've said numbers of times on this pod, but we'll do sites. They tend to be 30 to 80 adults in the room, plus plus kids most of the time. But what that means is that when you're at a site, you are generally relationally connected to most other people at the site. You know people, and they know you. And so when you're having a go, you're not exposed in front of a room full of strangers and the pressure and the judgment that comes with that. But you're with your friends, you're with people who have journeyed with you, who understand who you are, and generally are cheering for you and want you to do well. And it's like, oh, of course, like this person, we're going to give them a bit of leeway because they're 20 years old and they're preaching for the first time. And this is a wonderful thing. We're all excited about it. That's a very different feeling to, who's that 20-year-old up there? I've no idea who they are. Like, why are they so special that they get to do it? And it's really a different feel when you can be part of that kind of group. I'm not sure how it would work if we scaled up to different size sites. And I guess churches that are on that model, there are questions for them to wrestle through and figure out. It means as well things like someone checking us out as a church. I mean, if I was checking out a church, I'd probably download a few sermons and listen and try and get a feel for it. When someone does that with us, there's a good chance they might get a preach by you or me or one of our team who've been doing it for a while. But there's also a good chance they might get a first-timer or someone who we're just in the process of bringing through. And what they'll hear might be quite different to church down the road where senior pastor preaches every week and smashes it. And like it's always like very, very high standard. And I think we just realise that's presenting who we are to the world. We're big on have a go, we're big on empowerment, and that means there will be a range from, yeah, I was fine, to, yeah, I was really good, and everywhere in between.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the things I've noticed about us is we don't tend to talk standards so much. We do train hard, actually. So I've been in churches where they talked high standards but did no training. So we do train hard, and we do feedback a lot. So for our preaching, you do. But generally in how we bring through leaders, and that because it is relational, we try to lean into honesty and that kind of... and to help people really kind of talk through what they're doing. I mean, even this week we were kind of talking about one of our sites, which is in a different language, and the leader was like, "What do we do next? How do we get this? How do we move forward? What are the next steps for it?" And it wasn't her job to work that out on her own as the kind of lead entrepreneur. It was very relational, connected. Let's work this out together. And I don't think she could have gone off and just ignored us and done a thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, she probably could have done, and we'd have tolerated, but her chances of success would have dropped loads, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Because we've seen other people do that in the past, myself included. So I think there was that kind of relational connection, again, has really come through. But we tend not to talk standards, so we don't ever go standard of excellence.
Yeah.
We actually will be quite tolerant of Sundays where you think, that wasn't great. And we'll try to get to the bottom of kind of what went wrong. But sometimes it just doesn't.
Yes.
If for all the will in the world. And actually, there are churches you look at where they will say, we've got really excellent standards. And you look at it and think, it's all right. In your opinion, it is excellent, but it's fine. I mean, is it that much better?
Yes.
I don't know as it is. So,
yeah.
It's interesting.
I was with one of our site teams recently, and we were talking about people who anchor meetings, and someone asked a question about like the standard and how do we get the people who we're given opportunities to do it to be good? Yeah. And we're talking exactly on that word excellence. And where we got to is the idea of excellence and the idea of empowerment.
Yeah.
Are both values people speak about. You can't actually have both.
Yes.
Like they fight against each other.
Yes.
And the more you push for excellence, the more people you're edging out of opportunities to do stuff.
Yes.
And the more you're willing to invest in people and giving chances to do things and to grow into being very good, actually you do need to sacrifice that. It's got to be an excellent presentation.
Yeah.
And again, when you're in a room full of 50 people who are your mates, there's a lot of space for that. I mean, when you're with your family, you don't have to present everything polished. And if church is family, then
it is interesting. Like the so we do have bars for entry, don't we? Into this, but they tend to be it's teachability is big for us, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Trying to remember the top three: teachability, relational intelligence, spiritual velocity. So for us, those three, if you have them, we are very likely to say yes to you for stuff or ask you to do things.
Yeah.
And that we've had very excellent people who are very gifted who aren't teachable, who we've said yes to, and it never works. They're just their success rate really goes through the floor, even though they're probably some of our better leaders.
Yes.
It is really interesting to observe. So we do, I think sometimes we have a bit of reputation, we'll say yes to anyone for anything, which isn't true.
Yeah.
But it's more that if they're teachable, then we know if it's not great, they'll listen and they will learn and they'll take feedback and they'll grow and they'll go on the journey.
So. Yes. Yeah, it's interesting on the teachability one. I think most people who it's not worked out with are because they've not been teachable.
Yeah.
But then I think about myself when I first came in, and I had the know-it-all mentality of a young man. And
you did, Tom. Yeah.
I absolutely did.
I was super humble, I think we should...
You were the most humble man in the world.
I was the most humble person you've ever met.
Yes. But at the time, like, looking at me then, I was like, okay, if that guy showed up now, like, I be raising red flags like on teachability. Yeah. And it's something that really over time and lots of relationship and lots of team that I've been able to grow in to the extent that I have. I'll leave it up to you whether I've fully got there or not. But even things like the teachability, the relational intelligence, the spiritual velocity, they're all process and they're all journey and they're things that if a person is not quite there today, it doesn't mean that we can't have faith that tomorrow they will be and can grow into these things. But it needs to be a person who's willing to go there and willing to work with us. A stubborn person who just won't hear it and thinks they know better is always going to find it difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was probably Colin's kind of magic skill, his Gandalf ability, wasn't it? The ability to get someone to listen and be teachable, I think.
Yeah.
I guess coaching would be his. And so for all of us, kind of our generation, that would have been. So I'd have turned up the same as you. I thought I knew my stuff, even having never done any of the things I thought I knew about. And actually that kind of his diligence with time spent and then allowing us to have a go and then fail and or succeed. And it's usually a bit of everything, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And then finding us pathways back in after failure. Yes. So the often with have a go, it can feel like if it fails, then you've just got time out.
Yeah.
And actually there's little time out, really. It was how do we get you back moving and your confidence growing again? Mm-hmm. Really very, like almost straight away. So I think that's important for us to remember, isn't it? I think
it is. Cool. I think we'll leave the conversation there. Have a go. Probably of all the cultures we talk about, this is the one that we probably bring up most. It seems to be at the centre of the conversation, but it really has kind of fueled who we are and where we go. But we'll be back soon with more content talking about another of the cultures that we have.